Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Iran, normally the world's second largest oil producer, today imposed domestic fuel rationing. The move was necessitated by a crippling strike in the southern oil fields that has cut production to a 27-year low. And it's a measure of the gravity of the situation now confronting the Shah. Troops opened fire today on a crowd marching in support of striking university professors. At least four people were killed, as many as 50 wounded. Increasingly, as we hear from Randy Daniels, Tehran is falling into the grip of the opposition.
Iranian soldiers tried in vain this morning to regain control of Tehran's streets and restore order. The government warned anti-Shah demonstrators in a series of radio broadcasts to stay off the streets, but the demonstrators had something else in mind. Even though there is a critical gasoline shortage here, anti-government forces urged Iranians to drive around the city to clog the streets so the army could not move. The tactic is working. All over Tehran, troop convoys are stuck in traffic, and the army has been unable to stop any anti-Shah demonstration for very long. In the central business district this morning, thousands of Iranian dissidents gathered and yelled, "The Shah must go," and "To hell with Jimmy Carter." Soldiers charged the demonstrators, firing shots into the air. One can still hear gunshots all over the city. Drivers stuck in massive traffic jams joined in the anti-Shah protest. Hundreds emerged from their cars, yelling, "Down with the Shah," while others beat their car horns in unison. Tehran has been brought to a virtual standstill. Most stores are closed, and tension here is mounting. Randy Daniels, CBS News, Tehran.
The Iranian National Airline has canceled all of today's flights from Tehran. A new move was made today to set up unauthorized Jewish settlements in occupied territory, but Israeli troops quashed it almost at once. Dan Raviv reports from Tel Aviv.
Dozens of members of Gush Emunim, the ultra-nationalist Jewish settlement movement, moved on to two hilltops about 5 miles north of Jerusalem this morning. It was the organization's first attempt to set up unauthorized settlements since the week after the Camp David Accords were signed in mid-September. At that time, Gush Emunim was protesting Prime Minister Begin's promise to build no new settlements on the West Bank for 3 months. Now that the freeze is over, the ultra-nationalists are protesting the fact that Begin's government has not authorized any new settlements. Just as in September, Israeli troops moved in within hours to evict the illegal settlers. Defense Ministry sources report about 30 arrests on one hill, 15 on the other. No injuries are reported. Gush Emunim leaders say settlers will be moving on to other West Bank sites in the coming week. The Israeli government has made it clear it will tear down all unauthorized campsites. And the cabinet is holding off on approving any new settlements at this stage of the negotiations with Egypt. Dan Raviv for CBS News, Tel Aviv.
Algerian President Houari Boumediene died this morning, 6 weeks after he lapsed into a coma. He was 53 years old. Boumediene ruled Algeria for 13 years after it achieved independence from France, and he became one of the foremost third world figures. The 22 member states of the Arab League have declared a week of mourning. Boumediene opposed Egyptian-Israeli peace moves, and his funeral is considered likely to provide the occasion for a summit conference of Arab leaders who feel the same way. 5 days from now, on January 1st, the United States will establish full diplomatic relations with China, and at the same time will sever its formal ties with the nationalist Chinese on Taiwan. In advance of that event, a high-level U.S. delegation reaches Taipei this morning, and Donna Liu reports that its arrival will provide something of a showdown between Taiwan and the United States.
The official mission, headed by Deputy Secretary of State Warren Christopher, will stay in Taipei for less than 2 days. No one expects the U.S. delegation to accomplish much in such a short time. But at least both sides will have a formal exchange of views and pave the way for future negotiations. In anticipation of the upcoming visit, politicians and intellectuals are calling for Taiwan to make firm demands for a guarantee of its security and a clarification of its status. The government has so far kept discreetly quiet on the issue. Officials say they will wait and see what the American delegates have to offer. One politician wondered, if the U.S. is going to divorce us, what kind of alimony is it prepared to pay? Donna Liu for CBS News, Taipei.
As Taiwan waits for the answer to that question, China is already examining the answer to another question. As we hear from CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb in Washington, it concerns nuclear power.
U.S. officials say it is just a coincidence, but the fact is, last week, after President Carter's decision to normalize relations with China, the U.S. quietly passed the word to France that it would have no objections to the sale of two light water nuclear reactors to the Peking regime. Each reactor costs $1 billion, and important elements of each are made by a Westinghouse subsidiary in France. This would be the first time that a Western country with U.S. approval has sold nuclear reactors to the Peking regime. It takes up to 2 years for the reactors to be built and shipped to China. Officials say the U.S. decision was made last week not because of the normalization action, but rather because China might have turned to West Germany or Sweden for the reactors if the U.S. had not given France permission to proceed first. Because of the Westinghouse connection, the U.S. has a right and obligation, according to U.S. law, to make certain that the reactors are to be used only for peaceful purposes and not to be transferred to any other country. The Soviet reaction to all this is not yet known. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
The State Department reported yesterday that its attempt to solve the political crisis in Nicaragua by means of a negotiated settlement has hit a serious snag. The department criticizes President Somoza for not agreeing to a plebiscite supported by international mediators, and it points out that the plan has been accepted by Somoza's opponents. Closing arguments will be heard today in the Oregon rape trial of John Rideout. And Barry Peterson reports that the case may go to the jury by nightfall.
The prosecution and defense rested yesterday after testimony from both Rideout and his wife, Greta, who accused him of rape. The trial is the first court test of an Oregon law that says marriage is no longer a defense for rape. The defense attorneys will request an acquittal from the judge. That is normal at this point. It is doubtful but not impossible that the judge would grant such a motion. Most likely, the 8-woman, 4-man jury will start deliberating sometime after lunch. So much of this case rests on the credibility of the Rideouts now getting a divorce. If the jury believes Greta, then it believes she had sex with her husband after being beaten and because she feared for her physical safety. If jurors believe John, they will accept there was an argument that October 10th. He slapped her, but lovemaking was their way of making up. If John Rideout is convicted, he faces a possible 20-year prison term, but not before defense attorneys go ahead with already promised appeals. Barry Peterson, CBS News, Portland.
Authorities in Des Plaines, Illinois, have now recovered 9 bodies at the home of John Gacy, and they feel certain they'll find more. Gacy, being held on a charge of murder, is suspected of killing 32 young men. The Cook County Medical Examiner says he has never come upon a more horrifying sight. Spain's new constitution went into effect this morning. Ed Gress has the story in Madrid.
In a formal and solemn ceremony today, King Juan Carlos I signed the new Spanish constitution, thus making it the supreme law of the land. The two houses of parliament met to listen to their king, who spoke briefly about the significance of the constitution. The 40-year-old monarch underscored that this was the birth of a new democratic period for the entire nation. He said also that he was proud to be king at a time when new liberties were promised for all Spaniards. The outgoing head of the Spanish Parliament, Antonio Gil, also spoke, saying that at this point, Spain did not have to listen to advice from other nations on what democracy was all about. He paid tribute to the king, saying he was confident that Juan Carlos would serve the new Spanish democracy well. Once the entire ceremony was over, units of the country's 3 armed forces passed in review, shouting "Long live Spain" as the king returned their salute. Ed Gress for CBS News, Madrid.
A group of young people from South China marched into the center of Peking today and unfurled a protest banner in Tiananmen Square. They're demanding a meeting with senior officials so that they can state their grievances about life on a state farm. And they say they won't leave until they meet with Prime Minister Hua Guofeng, Deputy Premier Deng Xiaoping, or their representatives. The dollar gained slightly against the Japanese yen today, but declined against most of the European currencies. The price of gold rose about $6 an ounce in both London and Zurich.